powerful is the Cox Network. So powerful that one day, the internet will let your doctor perform miracles from thousands of miles away.
Connecting to remote operating room.
Giving a whole new meaning to the term house call.
Operation complete.
The Cox Network. With multi-gig speeds now available, it's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, bringing us closer. Limited availability in select areas. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms apply. Other restrictions may apply.
The Las Vegas Raiders have partnered with the global lifestyle app True Connect to give the gift of wellness. Transform your mind, body, and soul through thousands of hours of premium fitness content, guided meditations, progress tracking, and more. Visit tcfree.fit to redeem one free year of True Connect exclusively for Raider Nation.
You're listening to the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast. Here are your hosts, Bucky Brooks and Rhett Lewis.
Raider Nation, what's happening? The 2024 NFL Draft is in the books. And Tom Telesco, Antonio Pierce, and the entire Raiders draft team can stand up and take a bow. The culmination of months and months and months of work is now done, and we are back here on the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast to take a look now that the dust has settled. Alongside Bucky Brooks, I am Rhett Lewis. So here we go, Buck. We got some actual cold, hard data points to talk about. Mm-hmm. Instead of projecting these picks anymore, the picks are in. And let's get into it here. But let's first start with how the first round kind of began. Obviously, it was the first round of the quarterback. Six first round QBs go, which was, you know, a record in how fast they went right up before the Raiders got on the clock. 6 and 12 picks. How do you think that affected ultimately what fell to the Raiders there at 13?
It had a tremendous effect. Rhett, as we talk about it, the offense dominated the day. So you think about the first 14 picks being offensive players, six quarterbacks going within the first 12 picks. It left really, really good players available for the teams that were at the bottom part of the first round. And whenever you have that many quarterbacks go, all those quarterbacks were not rated as top five players on various boards. That meant that some top five players were going to be available, whether they were offense or defensive players, they were going to be available in the middle to the latter part of the first round. And the Raiders were able to scoop up like a top five pick that normally wouldn't be there in most drafts.
Yeah. And I guess that's, you know, that becomes the conversation then, you know, about Brock Bowers, right? The tight end from Georgia, who ends up going, you know, number 13 overall to the Raiders there. And I don't recall seeing any mock drafts that had the Raiders taking Brock Bowers, because look, whether you want to admit to it or not, mock drafts ultimately become about filling needs and filling fits, right? That you think make the most sense, you know, or what you're hearing and all that. And look, I don't know how many projections the Raiders went through, but you know, I'd love to know the number where it actually came out to where Bowers was available there at 13. And I think you do have to weigh that with the quarterbacks being gone, right? Because I think there probably would have been some consideration given if Michael Penix was still on the board at 13, which a lot of us kind of anticipated at that point. You kind of get that was kind of part of the conversation was one, hey, if there's a quarterback, we're going to think long and hard about this one, right? And then if the quarterbacks are gone, it becomes, is it Bowers? Is it O-line? Or is it DB? And where does the value lie?
Yeah, so a lot of times when you're in the room and you're looking at the board, you have the vertical board, which is your top 120, and then you have your horizontal board, which in essence is just like your top 10 by position. And so as you're going through, you're looking at it and, you know, you're like, okay, man, the quarterback is off the board. All of these other players are off the board. But now we have this player like a Brock Bowers that is a blinking light on the board because he's head and shoulders above everyone else that you have graded. Then it becomes a conversation. Do we go with need or do we really go with the best player available? Old school scouts, Ron Wolf, who learned at the knee of Al Davis for the Raiders before he went on to be a legendary general manager, most notably for the Green Bay Packers, he would always say, hey, man, if you take good players, you can never go wrong because you just have a roster of good players. Even if you have a surplus at the position, you can always trade off a good player to get back what you need. Well, the Raiders had a really good tight end last year that they took from Notre Dame, Michael Meyer. Well, now here you are looking at a talented tight end in Brock Bowers, and you're saying, man, can we go and get another tight end? Yes, because now you can play both of these guys, have two tight ends on the field, run the football, make the game easy for the quarterback, and you have a blue chip player who should be a star early in his career. So to me, it made sense. You always had additional opportunities to go address maybe more pressing needs on the offensive line, which is actually what the Raiders did in the latter part of the draft.
Yeah, we'll get to that here in just a second, where they went in the second round, which was a big, powerful man and a big time value. But I want to finish up the conversation with Bowers here, because I do think, like, whoa, we already had a tight end. I'm like, hold on a second. 12 personnel is allowed and sometimes encouraged in today's NFL. Give me a sense of what do you think that could look like when Mayer and Bowers are on the field together with, what, let's say, Devontae Adams, Jacoby Myers, and, you know, let's say it's Zamir White in the backfield. Like, what does that look like? What are some of the things that allows you to do?
Okay, so here's where the conversation between the head coach and general manager can really impact the draft. See, because Antonio Pierce, captain, Pro Bowl player in this league at linebacker for a long time, can sit in there and say, hey, you know how challenging it is to deal with 12 personnel, the different iterations and formations that you have to deal with in terms of defending the extra gaps that the extra tight end can create, either on opposite sides or on the same side when you have a tight end in a wing. So in the running game, it changes the way that you have to defend the offense. But also, if you have a guy like Bowers, who we've seen at Georgia, line up in the slot, take jet sweep handoffs, line up in the backfield, he now is a guy that can create mismatches and really kind of dictate how the coverage has to play the Raiders, because he is such a multifaceted playmaker. When you have a player like that, a special player who also rates out as a top five talent, you take him, and then you put the onus on the offensive coaches to figure out a plan. But that plan has to be articulated before you make the pick. You have to be able to give me some semblance of what the plan is going to be if we take him, how we're going to utilize him, because I want to make sure that if we make this pick, we're going to get a return on the investment, because you just don't want to take a top five pick and have him sitting on the sideline, because then you would have been better directed to take another position player.
Sure. Sure. And that's where Luke Getsy comes into the conversation too. And he's gotten his eyes on all over these offensive prospects, and, probably feels pretty dang good about getting Brock Bowers into the mix there with this offense. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch that unfold with whomever ends up starting at quarterback, Minshew or Aiden O'Connell. I think if you're a Raider fan out there and you're like, gosh, you know, and you're wondering what might have been if the quarterbacks had shaken out a different way and one was available, just think about this pick as helping the current quarterback situation, right? And elevating the current quarterback situation, which is also what the next pick is going to do, which was Jackson Powers Johnson, guy who's got a burger named after him. Somebody get like Gordon Ramsay on the line. We might need to come up with a new burger over at the restaurant on the strip out there. Wherever we're getting burgers in Vegas these days, bring Jackson Powers Johnson in and get that man his own burger. That is a 6'3", 330-pound center. Now that's the interesting part of this to me, center at Oregon, but the way that pick got announced and the way it was filled out on the card was guard Jackson Powers Johnson. I think we all said, center, could play some guard. And it sounds like that's where the Raiders want to use him. And it also feels like that's a way to maybe get your best five offensive linemen out onto the field. And so with this, I think this was a home run. This was a potential first round pick that you get down midway near the set into the, or midway through the second round. So that feels like first round value in a sense, right? At 44.
Yeah. This is a guy that was, expected to come off the board in the first round. Many expecting him to be the pick for either the Miami Dolphins or even the Dallas Cowboys at the bottom of the first round. He makes his way into the second round, and anyone who has watched him on tape, you can see the power, the physicality that he brings to the table. Back then, when you watched him at Oregon, he was playing center, but everyone has to understand, if you're a center, you've also have worked at guard, because most of the time the guard and the centers are interchangeable. This gives the Raiders a powerful man at the point of attack. We talk about when the Raiders played well down the stretch, they were able to run the football. Antonio Pierce has talked about wanting to run the football, wanting to control the game, wanting to impose the Raiders' will on their opponents. Having a beefy interior player that has some nastiness, has some pop and some power and some violence, that is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, and that's what I wrote, you know, on Raiders.com when I was doing the blow-by-blow of each of these picks here for the Raiders, was that that nasty mentality should fit perfectly in silver and black. And so he pops down from Eugene, Oregon, and lands in Las Vegas, Nevada. And so excited to see what Jackson Powers Johnson brings to that offensive line. And then we double up on offensive line. I actually had the Raiders doubling up on offensive linemen in consecutive picks in the 7-round mock draft, but in the 5th and 6th round, they instead go 2nd and 3rd round. And I just don't think you could pass up the value, as we mentioned on JPJ there. And then they come back in the 3rd and get arguably, you know, one of the top 3 tackles in the Big Ten this last year in Delmar Glaze from Maryland. And look, I think admittedly, this is a guy to me that felt like, you know, is a little bit further along in pass protection at this point. You know, I don't know that we know Maryland for a power run game all these last few years with Talia Tungavailoa kind of throwing it all over the place in Mike Locksley's offense there. So I kind of felt like, again, this was an opportunity to bolster, you know, your tackle group, maybe give you a swing tackle there. He played left in Maryland. But I do like this pick here with Delmar Glaze, again, continuing to fortify that group up front and give you some options up there.
Yeah, Delmar Glaze has been taught the right way. Mike Locksley has a philosophy or saying that the only way you build a championship team is much like you build, grandma used to bake cookies. You know, original recipe, it has to be done the hard way. You have to do the hard stuff. Well, this guy's done the hard stuff throughout his time at Maryland. He now comes to the Raiders, and the expectation are the Raiders going to play a certain way. They're going to play in a way that is really reminiscent of those throwback Raiders teams. He has that in his game. You see the physicality. You see the toughness. You see kind of like the angry mentality that look, the Raiders want to embody. AP has talked about that ad nauseum. And so then you see back-to-back picks where you see Jackson Powers Johnson, yeah. You see Delmar Glaze. They both have that. And so it's a concerted effort that the Raiders are making, that this offensive line, they're going to be the bullies of the block. They want to knock people around. They want to be big and imposing and physical, play with that violence. And when they do that, they're going to be able to run the football, and then they're going to be able to protect the quarterback. It's all part of what I would say is an identity makeover. They want to be a physical team, and they want to play a certain way that resonates in the AFC. And Glaze gives them another player that can help them continue to make strides towards doing that.
And again, I think it reinforces, you know, just how seriously they would have been considering an offensive lineman, you know, in the 1st round. When you go back to back in the 2nd and 3rd round, and look, the value just didn't match up again in the 1st round. 3 of those offensive tackles had gone off in the first 11 picks with Joe Alt, J.C. Latham, and Olu Fashanu. I wonder if, you know, one of those players is on the board. Maybe that changes the calculus at 13 and then subsequently in the 2nd and 3rd round. But love how it ended up shaking out for the Raiders. All right, as we move through here, into the 4th round, this was a player that I would imagine was a little bit off the radar of the mainstream draft community in DeCamrion Richardson, just because he didn't play in any of the All-Star games. You did go to the combine, and I think if you were watching the combine coverage like you and I were, you like did a little bit of a second take there, because you got a 6'2" long levered corner that runs 4.34 in the 40-yard dash. And now you kind of start to remember, I remember seeing that and going back and watching some of what he did. And man, I think that this dude, while he didn't have a ton of ball production at Mississippi State, I think you see a guy that you can project as a big time outside corner at some point, which is a place where you and I talked about there being some need to upgrade some depth there.
Yeah, the length stands out to me. And with some of the other guys in the secondary, it's common trait. 6'2", 195, as you talked about. A guy who's challenging wide receivers. A guy who has kind of that ability to really nullify some of the big body receivers that have been able to dominate in the AFC. This is an intriguing developmental prospect. When you take someone in the 4th round, the expectation is not that they come and start, but they come and try and carve out a role on special teams as a backup and those things. That is a very realistic goal for a player with the physical attributes as Richardson.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, if you were following the Mississippi State Pro Day, and look, we follow all those things, 8 reps on the bench at 225 is a lower number on that scale. But then you look at his production and you're like, dude's 85 tackles in 22, 79 tackles in 23. Mm-hmm. That is a willing tackler there. You don't just fall into tackles that way. So that's just something to keep in mind when you kind of juxtapose those types of numbers. As we continue into day three here, Tommy Eichenberg from Ohio mm-hmm. State and Dylan Lobby from New Hampshire, running back, two positions that we've talked about as kind of being a little bit, you know, lesser in terms of value on rosters these days. But look, Eichenberg was one of the most productive dudes in the Big Ten at any position on defense in that entire conference. He was a Rose Bowl MVP in 2021. So he kind of jumped onto the scene there. Mm-hmm. He's an absolute tackling machine. He was banged up a little bit this year, Buck. But again, you know, jumping into a room with Robert Spillane there and, you know, guys in with AP, like with Antonio Pierce as your head coach, drafting a linebacker means a little bit something extra. You know what I mean? And I think he'll have his eyes on this dude here, Tommy Eichenberg, and certainly passed his test to get into the silver and black.
So the interesting thing about that is the linebacker position, AP really taking a big role in that. Robert Spillane being able to be a willing mentor and teacher. But you don't have to make his hay on special teams. And as we think about special teams and the new kicking rules and how the kickoff returns, and that means you got to be able to win your one-on-one matchups and tackle in space, all those things. Eichenberg is a huge addition. He's a player that'd be a valuable commodity as a special teamer, and he will get his opportunity to develop and earn his way onto the field as a spot player or even more down the line.
Yeah, and so I mentioned Lobby, who goes next in the sixth. And, you know, I think people see the New Hampshire. You might be like, huh? I'm like, don't let the sticker on the helmet fool you. This dude can play. And I love what he did at the Senior Bowl down in Mobile. And I love what he does in the pass game, too, Buck. I mean, you're talking about 68 catches this year to lead all mm-hmm. Division I running backs, despite the fact he played in the FCS. Almost 700 receiving yards, 7 touchdowns. He's got 4 career return touchdowns. And again, this brings the new kickoff return thing into focus. By the way, the Raiders also went and signed an undrafted free agency, LaDietrick Tulu Griffin, who we saw at the Shrine Bowl as a big time speed dude, led the nation in kick return yardage in average in 2022 at Mississippi State. So keep that in mind. And then Lobby, it kind of reinforces the fact that I think people are feeling like returners might also end up having a bigger frame, at least on kickoff return, because of the proximity that the kick team has now to the returner. This is like an all purpose dude right here.
Yeah, all-purpose, small school standout, a guy who has a lot of production in a bunch of different areas. When you're down at the bottom of the draft and you're sitting there and you're trying to figure out, okay, who can we bring in? You're trying to have redeeming traits that will give them an opportunity not only to make the roster, but to give them a chance to get a jersey every week. Because he is able to do so many things, Labe can catch it out of the backfield. He has return skill. I really love what he brings and what he could contribute as one of those guys that's part of the running back by committee situation.
Okay, going to group the last two guys that were drafted, 223 and 229 overall. 6 picks just separated them, both in the defensive backfield. Both guys you and I saw in our broadcast of the East-West Shrine Bowl on NFL Network and really liked them both and both drew some rave reviews for their work there. Trey Taylor was the first of the 2 seventh-round picks, safety out of Air Force, and then MJ Devonshire, a corner from Pitt. So what we'll say about Trey Taylor, the dude won the Pat Tillman Award, which is given annually to the player at the East-West Shrine Bowl that possesses the character, intelligence, sportsmanship, and service that Tillman himself played with and exhibited throughout his career. And, of course, his service to our country is a big piece of that award as well. And obviously Trey Taylor, having played at a service academy at Air Force, certainly made some sense there. But this dude that can play on the field, he won the Thorpe Award. It's the best DB in the country playing at Air Force, Buck. So you know there's something there.
Yeah, there is something there. He has a knack for getting his hands on the ball. Great instincts and awareness. We had a chance to watch him at East-West Shrine Bowl. This is a guy that just kind of gets it on a major level. And when we think about the defense, because Patrick Graham employs a thinking man's defense, particularly for the safeties, there's a lot that's on them, responsibilities. Trey Taylor is calm and cool under pressure. He's also a certified baller when it comes to getting his hands on the ball and then making tackles. This is a good pick. And I know when you're talking about the bottom of the draft, like how realistic is it that these guys can make a team and get onto it? It's very real. The Raiders have traditionally given guys opportunities. Trey Taylor will have a real opportunity to kind of crack the lineup when he's ready to crack the rotation.
Yeah, and he could be a guy that I think you could use on special teams very quickly. I think he's got that ability in his arsenal. So excited to see what Trey Taylor does. You know, I think he'll be a great guy in the locker room as well. Hey, look, Buck, for MJ Devonshire, the corner out of Pitt, you know, as I mentioned, we saw him on at the East-West Shrine Bowl. I remember the coaches telling us this is a sticky man corner, a guy very comfortable back out on the island. He's got a lot of experience, played in 50 games over 5 years at Kentucky and Pitt. 8 career interceptions, and he returns 3 of them for touchdowns. So in a round, at a time in the draft where you're looking for traits, those are pretty appealing.
Yeah, those are really appealing. He played for Pat Narduzzi at Pittsburgh. Pat Narduzzi loves to have his corners play bump and run on every down. So this guy is comfortable in that. He's been well-trained in that, and that's going to give him an opportunity to jump in the front of the line when it comes down to those man-to-man corners. And he fits the profile. When you look at the secondary, you look at the roster, he is the guy that kind of falls in line with the rest of the guys that are having a lot of success. I expect him to be a very, very competitive player throughout the preseason, and that it might be enough to earn him not only a job, but a spot down the line to be able to get into those sub packages and to contribute also as a special teams player.
Well, Bucky, that's going to do it for us. Another run here working through the Raiders NFL Draft podcast. Appreciate all your great insight throughout this run. Man, it's been a lot of fun. And now we get to kind of follow these guys as they make their journey into the silver and black and through the NFL. It's going to be a great preseason, great training camp, kind of keeping tabs on these guys. And we hope to be back with you, Raider Nation, here real soon. We want to send a special thanks to Marcus, to Eddie, to everybody at Silver and Black Productions for all they do, getting us on the air each and every week. And Raider Nation, we appreciate the love you've showed us. We can't wait to be back with you here soon. So one last time, for Bucky Brooks, I am Rhett Lewis. We will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the Raiders Podcast Network wherever you get your podcasts.